You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. Because I was beguiled by the original The Beguiled.
I was too. I think the audience is going to be the most beguiled out of the entire cast of The Beguiled.
I was positively entranced.
Now, see, you ruined the whole beguiled thing.
Yeah, exactly.
you're such a party pooper.
I know. That's why you keep me around.
Whereas Frank plays along. Thank you, Frank. I play along, sure.
Yeah.
We're talking about the remake by Sofia Coppola, the apparently controversial remake.
Oh, don't make me.
That's such a small bit of controversy.
Yeah.
It's unimportant. Well, not to say unimportant, but...
Remake of...
No. We'll touch on that, because I actually think it's very important, the fact that it has become a controversy. Yeah. But we'll get on to that.
Okay. Yeah. The original one was directed by Don Siegel, was a vehicle for Clint Eastwood in the role that here is being played by Colin Farrell. Mm-hmm. And it's... I'm not really clear on how well it performed at the time. I never even heard of it till they sent me out a Clint Eastwood set. And I was like, haven't heard of this one. Put it in and was like, oh my God, that was amazing.
I heard about it from a biography on Clint Eastwood. I thought, oh my God, it's that scene where he accuses the principal of like what she does. And I have to watch this movie.
It's a smaller Clint Eastwood film, but it wasn't intended to be one of his big ones. It was really with him.
Yeah.
It was in the middle of his one for the studio, one for me phase.
Yeah.
Continuing to his long-term relationship with Don Siegel, which he made quite a few very quality films with.
But this was by far their darkest film.
This is a very
morally ambiguous, which he was doing very well at the time, but I think this was arguably his most morally ambiguous film ever.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
To its strength, but it kind of fits into this point where in his career where his performance is not quite villain, but not quite anti-hero.
Right.
But then it doesn't give anybody any good points. This is a film about everybody is to a certain degree disreputable.
Yeah.
It's a dismantling of the whole idea of the acceptable Civil War, that everybody was slightly nice somehow.
And both these films, this and the remake, sort of start along the same path here, which is American Civil War, 1863. It's a girls' academy school,
like a boarding house
with a bunch of young girls, a few slightly older girls, and then the headmistress and sort of the number one teacher, mm-hmm. if you will. In the original version, there's also a slave who is a character in it. Mm-hmm. We'll get to the controversy involving that later. But the littlest girl finds a wounded Union soldier out in the woods, and her being, just a sweet, innocent child, helps him back to the house, and they're all like, oh!
It's the Christian thing to do.
The Christian thing to do is save him. They lock him in a room, and they gradually heal him, and one by one, they all start to have a connection with him, and he's charming. They're like maybe all the soldiers aren't that bad. They're not, obviously not all rapists like we've heard and everything.
Yeah.
And there's a turn in both films where everything goes away that maybe you could have seen something like it was going to happen, but the reaction from the ladies is one you probably didn't see coming. And whereas the first film I thought was much more of a had more of a sardonic revenge film quality to it. I didn't feel like they were chasing that as much in this remake. Not that that makes it any lesser. It's just a different take on this original book.
Well, this is the whole point of this. This is basically, apart from some structural changes to the script and some alterations to character motivation, this is basically the same story, but with the camera moved.
Mm-hmm.
Because part of the original is that it is told from Eastwood's character's POV, and he suddenly realizes that his attempts to manipulate this household full of women really are just backfiring very badly. But here, it is told from the female viewpoint.
Yeah, mainly
this is about the interactions of the women when this rock is thrown into their mm-hmm. already unstable lives, that they've built this pretense of a civilized environment that they've everybody's really. Everybody's run away from the school. The slaves have run away. Most of the students have been taken.
They can literally see black smoke from like just over the rise and hear the cannons going off.
And yet they're pretending that none of this is really affecting them.
Yeah.
And suddenly there's this man in the middle who has this explanation of why he's there. It's a question of how plausible that is. It's because you never have anything outside. You only have what people do and what they told you they have done to go upon at any one point in time. Their history is beautifully ambiguous.
Yes.
They're forced to acknowledge that there's actually a war.
Yeah, they're just pretending up. They're trying to keep this all together. And it's increasingly presented that this is untenable. Particularly because all it takes is one little interruption and everything goes to hell.
Mm-hmm. And here are the strong female characters, which are played by Nicole Kidman as sort of the headmistress of the house. The number one teacher is Kirsten Dunst. And then you have the oldest of the girls, Ellie Fanning, who is right off the bat, like she has that thing that, you know, 15, 16-year-old girls have where, like, they're flirting almost by default to some extent.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, she, like, sort of, like, you know, well, she's already going into womanhood, but he, like, sort of, like, spurns on the feelings of desire and sexuality and curiosity that comes with that age.
And I do think it's you know, a very Sofia Coppola film in the extent that, like, this is definitely more about, like, from, like you said, from the woman's point of view, and it's a very kind of feminist polemic in its way without being beating you on the head with it. Mm-hmm. And the criticisms were that, oh, well, when you take the slaves out, then some of the original story that had to do with racial issues is just not there, and so that's whitewashing. Coppola's response was perfectly reasonable.
She
was like,
too, like,
I didn't include any black characters because the moment you do, it has to have an, like, be to some degree about racial issues. If you take them out entirely, we're dealing with, like, the masculine, feminine dynamic and feminism issues purely, and it becomes a film just about that. She's like, I didn't want it to be.
She didn't want to shortchange that.
Yeah, she didn't want to shortchange that, and I think that's perfectly reasonable.
I think so, too. Yeah, absolutely.
Particularly because this is a short, elegant film, which is one of its strengths, as you know, it's very quiet for most of its duration, which is accurate. I mean, like, nobody's sat around talking to each other at great length. It's a low, slow boil, and I think if you put everything in that was in the original, which could get away with a lot because, you know, you are supposed to be a little bit more offended by all the characters in the original.
Mm-hmm.
If you'd have tried to cram it in, and everybody's been saying, oh, she should have, you know, taken a more intersectional approach, but, you know, there is a certain hiding to nothing for her taking that on.
Mm-hmm.
I think she would have been beaten up whatever she did at this point.
Yeah,
because that's just part of cultural criticism, though. I mean, you can say, well, you know, it kind of makes it weird by removing that, but she does say, look, I removed it for a reason. This wasn't just an accident. This isn't whitewashing. And in these environments, a lot of times slaves did run away. So that's not ahistorical or inaccurate.
Yeah.
And it is part, she actually turns that into part of the story by having the girls working in the fields. And you can feel the disgust that these Southern belles are having to get their hands dirty. And that they're really angry about it.
But you feel it's so authentic in a way as
well. Which actually works. So it's not like she just cuts them out. She does say, well, what happens? And that's part of, you know, what is unlikable about the characters here is that they don't go, well, we have to. You can feel them going like, oh, this is beneath me to a certain point. Yeah. And only the youngest of the girls who think, this is rather wonderful, I get to go foraging in the woods and it's kind of cool. They're okay with it.
Everybody has to be told, oh, you need to go do this. You need to repeatedly do your chores.
And one of the things I really liked about this was that I've always found Coppola, while she deals with female characters, and that has always been, you know, the core of her work, I actually felt this was the first time in a body work where I really understood the female characters. I think, you know, Virgin Suicide, they were so amorphous. They were shadow figures in the background. It's like, how do these boys feel about it? And they'll have that great degree.
Well, they were meant to be like a mystery, weren't they, though?
Yeah, but that's kind of like, I was like, that she made a film about how they were a mystery to a bunch of boys. They're not. Virgin Suicide is not about the girls. Which I thought was an interesting take for it to do, but it never really worked for me. And that's been a problem, I think, you know, Bling Ring, again. I don't care about any of these characters.
That was so dire.
She made a great film about a bunch of numbnuts, but fair enough, I don't care about them. Yeah. This, I actually felt, the depth of characterization was much deeper. I think this is, for me, this is her best film.
Oh, I agree.
I think so, too. And I think, because I love that she just focuses. She didn't have to say a lot in terms, there's not a lot of dialogue-heavy scenes, because she just lets the simple character dynamics come out when the soldier shows up. I think it's who these girls really are comes, you know, to the forefront. And, you know, they tend to, you know, their alliance is sort of, you know, sort of disintegrate. And, you know, it's what they really want.
And there's all the levels of, like, there's that hidden desperation that they all have. Like, what are we going to do? There's the thing Richard talked about with, like, well, God, we got to work in the fields. And suddenly he's like, hey, I'll work in the fields. I don't care. I'm good at this stuff. Yeah. And they're all like, well, that's great. Now I can just walk around in my flowery hat and, like, throw flowers on the ground or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's like, I can be a lady.
Yeah.
And he is so, like, playing on all the things that he knows he wants. But what's interesting here is I thought that in the original film, he had more, it was almost like he had more of a specific and sardonic plan.
Yeah.
Whereas here, it's more like he really is genuinely trying to be grateful and nice. But, I mean, while part of that being like, please, I hope these ladies don't turn me over to the Confederates.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, it's, you get that, okay, I think this is really a nice guy who's found himself in a weird situation.
He's so ambiguous a lot of times, which I really loved. But I think a lot of people are in this movie.
But his misogyny comes so to the forefront, which was, you know, I mean, it was this fucking Civil War. It was a lot of that going around when something happens that disrupts his sense of self in a very real physical way. And we see who he really is.
But I couldn't hate him as well during that time and that in that context and what that meant for him. I could understand where he was coming from.
To some extent, but, yeah. I mean, it's a very shocking moment for anyone. But, you know, it's also interesting. The film chooses to have him start to reel back from that at one point. To go, okay, I realized I overreacted. You understand, right? And it really becomes fascinating that that doesn't matter anymore at that point to these female characters. They're like, nope, we're done.
Well, but then
there's even internal betrayal in their responses.
Yeah.
This is very much about a bunch of characters who, when their lives are disrupted, they become their own motivations come to the fore.
Mm.
And they are internally contradictory, and they set themselves at, it sets them at odds with each other. And to a certain degree, they turn on the thing that has caused the disruption, ignoring the fact that they don't really like each other that much.
No. Yeah. They're just stuck together.
And what I loved about this film is that while you have this character, you know, Colin Farrell, yet another great performance.
That will probably not be given him. He will not be given as much credit as he deserves once again.
He's never is.
But, you know, I think he's probably going to get that for Killing of a Sacred Deer. I think that's probably going to, you know, he's going to be picking up his independence for Richard Wolf from everything I've heard. That's the one they'll finally bag him that.
But it'll also be like, and also the Beguiled, like,
currently. Yeah, but, you know, I think, you know,
Asterix Beguiled.
He holds his own in this so well without becoming an overshadowing presence. I think it is a phenomenal performance. This is one of Kidman's best performances in
a while.
I'll take probably a decade and a half, probably longer than that. I think this is really excellent work by her.
Kirsten Dunst as well. This is one of the best of her career.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
right here, easily. Right.
And Elle Fanning, who is only getting better.
Yeah, she's proven that she's like the secret weapon here. Of if you need a young actress in something, like her in 20th Century Woman was like,
that was an eye opener of a
performance where you're like, damn, this girl's got it going on.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Dakota's like, what the fuck? I'm still here.
Yeah, I know. Poor Dakota Fanning. Like, I always forget about her that she even exists. Sorry.
Sorry, Dakota.
And this is a beautiful film as well. I mean, this is
it's gorgeously shot.
It's, you know, the South in decline.
Yeah,
perfectly picked up, and that is one of the prevalent themes in this is like, you know, that Farrell's character is this guy who is kind of dropped into the war. There's a real question of whether it's really his war at all, which is something that comes to the fore. Whereas, like, they really are bells of the South, and they really, you know, they carry that baggage with them.
He's almost like a casualty in a way.
Yeah, they have this level of complexity in their interaction, and everything is just under the surface, which is part of what made the original Beguiled work.
Yeah,
but this is much more it's a colder take on it than the original, which when you get to the final act is very much, it's quite a sinister film. This is much more of a slow burn. Yeah. Everything happens in daylight.
Yes.
which in some ways makes it worse.
Or in glowing candlelight sometimes.
Yeah. It's beautifully shot. Yes. Everything about
this is shot by Philip LaSword, who got the nomination for Best Cinematography for The Grandmaster, which was well deserved.
Yeah.
Did anybody else love the fact that there was no music?
Yes.
Yeah.
Wasn't that great?
I think that added hugely to it.
It just makes it feel
Southern
so
gothic feel to it.
And so isolated.
Yes.
By that. You know?
Yeah.
And that's really what you get. I mean, all these characters, they're just incredibly isolated and afraid, and they've just taught themselves to not to behave as if everything was normal.
They're clinging to like a hope that, you know, that this will not be life forever.
Yes.
You know, we must endure. We must carry on.
And it's interesting that whereas I thought Eastwood's character was much more complex in the original, here Colin Farrell is not really that complex of a character, and he shouldn't be. He's more kind of baffled by these women to some degree. As new things happen and these women react to him in different ways, you can see him almost being confused, mm-hmm. being like, I'm not sure what I should do here.
Well, he's trying to come up with his plan of manipulation on the fly, and it reaches a point where it's like, you made your own life too complicated, and this is where it really bites back at you. And then it's how do the women respond to the situation that they have created from the situation mm-hmm. that he has created? And you sit there thinking, like, didn't you notice he was flirting with all of you? Like, isn't this really? That's one of the nice things about Farrell's performance is that he is undoubtedly trying to manipulate all of the girls. But his approach to how he does it differs with every single one of them.
Oh, yeah.
He's very, very good at this until
he makes until he makes one big typical male mistake.
Yes. But it's also like from his point of view, I mean, it's a lot about survival, because he could never really let his guard down, because he doesn't know that, you know, they might put the blue flag on the gate at any moment.
Yeah, to call the soldiers to come get him, where he will probably die in a prison.
Exactly. Yeah. So he needs to, you know, have his sort of like plan in check. And, you know, that does lead to manipulation on different levels, but
Go into the final thoughts.
You know, I love this film. I think it lived up to every bit of attention and hype and awards that came its way. Every shot is like a, you know, painting from, you know, Renoir. I can never say that name right. And
you did, so you're okay.
Yeah. Excellent.
You're fine.
And it's wonderfully acted. I think Kidman is at her best. You know, like, she commands every scene that she's in, almost. And Dunst is great. This well-acted, well-made all the way through. One thing that I let when I was driving home from watching is thought about the title. Who really is the Beguiled? Because you take all four central characters, each one, you make case that each one is beguiled by some, you know, the three women are beguiled by him in different ways, but he's also sort of taken with them. So, I don't know. I feel like that's sort of up for debate. But I love that it really just showed the grayness of people, grayness of humanity, especially during times of war. And I think it did, you know, very, very well.
And
so,
you give it?
I think I will give this 9 out of 10 mushrooms.
Richard?
This is Coppola's best work by far. I think this is her maturing as a director, and her ability to bring something extraordinary out of her cast here, in such an elegant, small, quiet environment. I mean, this never leaves the confines of the school, except a few trips into the woods for mushroom foraging. It's an extraordinary, delicate, and yet incisive achievement. I give it 8 out of 10 long staircases.
There's a lot of those shot here. Yeah, it's hard not to, loving the original like I do, to not keep comparing it. And I think they're both really solid films, but I also think, despite being almost essentially the same movie, with the difference of the POV changing, like same plot, they're incredibly different films nonetheless.
Yeah.
Tonally,
stylistically,
the conclusion, I think, has such a different feeling in both films. And like I said, with the original, it was almost a little genre-y, like by the end. You were kind of like, okay, it was fun in that sort of like crazy 70s revenge way, just transported to the antebellum South. Here it's not. It's so quiet, you know, at the point where there's a point in the film where Colin Farrell's just screaming, and it's upsetting because it's the first really loud thing that's happened in this very quiet, delicately put together little film. Such terrific performances across the board here. Once again, arguably Coppola's best. I really loved Somewhere,
too.
I probably need to revisit it as well at some point. But I thought that was terrific, so I kind of put this right at the same level as that for me. I really recommend this, but go into it knowing that, yes, this is a slow burn film. It is an arty film. it's just one of those, the perfection of quiet and all the things you can see through the fog. I give this 8 out of 10 gimpy soldiers.
Now the big question is, when do we get Sofia Coppola's play Misty for me?
It seems like a film she would take on.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Good call, Richard. I'm going to call Sofia right now.
I want points.
Tell her welcome back.
OneOfUs.net has been your one-stop shop for all things geek for years. But there's a side to them many of you have never heard. The subscription side. Subscribe and listen to great podcasts like The Breakfast Pub, The Original Gentleman, and the Watch a Movie With Us series. Head on over to OneOfUs.net and don't forget your towel.